It's good to be here. I normally don't come to this meeting. I see a lot of familiar faces, and welcome to our newcomer. What I have to say is my story. What you'll find if you hang around OA is that everybody has a different story, and one of the things I love about OA is it is not, I don't perceive it as a rigid program. You can kind of discover what works for you. It does require rigorous honesty and willingness and openness, but eventually if you find a sponsor and he or she will guide you, and if something doesn't work, then something else will work. A couple of weeks ago in our Monday meeting, somebody read this statement on page 83. This is our 12 and 12. It has a book cover on it because it's very well loved and ruined over the years. But I just want to read this first paragraph, and then I'm going to talk about how it was and how it is now. This is certainly my story. It says, many of us have come to Overeaters Anonymous after years of pursuing short-term solutions to our long-term problem of compulsive eating. And that was my story, and I'll tell you a little bit about what I tried that didn't work. One aspect of this program keeps us here is this promise of permanent recovery from this baffling malady. But what in the world is truly permanent? And then this quote, which comes from our Little for Today book on page 204, says, repetition is the only form of permanence that nature can achieve. And we happened to talk about that quote a couple of weeks ago in our meeting, and it's still sticking with me that I think I am here today because I've been willing to practice and repeat over and over again the things that work and to let go of the things that didn't work. So I'm just going to very quickly give you a little bit of my story. I came into OA in around 1990. I was a fairly normal kid, a looking kid, until about 6th or 7th grade when my body started to mature. And I think a lot for emotional reasons and some for genetic reasons, because all three of my daughters had the same pattern, I put on a lot of weight. So by the time I was in the 8th grade, I wouldn't call myself morbidly obese, but I definitely was 30, 40, 50 pounds overweight. I also was tall, so I was always the tallest in my class. I was 5'10". One benefit of old age is you shrink. I'm now 5'8", but I was 5'10". And so I was always in the center of the back row and hoping that, you know, other people would stand in front of me so they couldn't see my body. And I had a lot of shame about my body. And I had a stepfather that meant well, but shamed me a lot about it. And so I saw myself as morbidly obese. But now when I look back at pictures, I realize, well, yeah, you were kind of, quote, a big athletic-looking woman, but you were not what I would call more. But that's how I saw myself. And I went through step two in this same wonderful book. If you don't have it, I highly recommend it. Step two talks about all the crazy things we did, they're called short-term solutions to temporary fixes. And that was, I could tell you, the first 40 years of my life. That's my life. Short-term solutions to temporary fixes. And I did almost everything in that chapter, step two, except I didn't have my jaws wired shut, and I didn't have surgery. But short of that, I tried, every new thing that came along. And I've said this more than once, prior to being relieved of the compulsion to overeat, I would say conservatively 80% of my waking thoughts was food. Food or not food, or what I was going to do or what I wasn't going to do, and if I did this, then I would do. I mean, it was just nuts, and I shared at our last Monday meeting. The holidays are coming up, and I'm not, already scheming what I'm going to do between October 31st and January 1st. I always used to have this grand plan of how I was going to make it. So this is a one-day-at-a-time lifestyle, and what I've learned, and I can't say I have a stellar record in OA, because what I would do is I'd come into OA and I'd get fixed, and I'm very self-sufficient, and I'm okay now, and I can do this on my own. And that lasted a period of time, I don't know how long, until I realized, no, I can't do this on my own. And then I'd come back, and the last time I came back, very suddenly in 2001, my youngest daughter died, and I thankfully didn't go into alcohol, but I sure went into sugar. And I gained a lot of weight in 1 year, and it was almost like my daughter saying to me on the anniversary of her death, I could hear these words, "Okay, Mom, it's time to let go of the chocolate chip cookies." And I realized that I needed that. That's what I needed to do, and I didn't need to do that anymore. Thanks. And so that's when I came back and stayed. So I love this expression. We don't think ourselves into a new way of living. We live ourselves into a new way of thinking. So we have to be honest, open, and willing. And so what were some of the things that I was willing to do over and over again? You know, practicing, I think when you first do something for the first time, I'm just noticing this now with my 9-year-old granddaughter who's in third grade. She's switching from manuscript printing to cursive. And she has beautiful manuscript printing, and she's very proud of it. And it's not effortless, but it's very nice. And now she's just kind of laboriously doing each letter and trying to figure out how that letter connects to the next letter. Thank God they're still teaching in her school, and a lot of schools aren't teaching. But, you know, the effort and attention that it takes for her to write something in cursive. I write her a letter every week, and now I'm writing her in cursive so she can see, start reading it. It takes a lot of attention and focus. And that's what I find with any new behavior that I want to instill, is that, you know, until I have the muscle memory for it, it just takes a lot of memory and focus. I remember we believed that all three of our girls should drive old-fashioned stick shift cars. And so they all learned to drive that way, you know, and you could just see, okay, first I've got to press in the clutch. And then it just took a lot of attention. And so I think all these things take a lot of attention. You can't just coast into recovery. It takes focus and attention. And I love that slogan, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And that's what I've been doing in OA. And some things have succeeded well, and I don't have to put much effort into them, and others don't. I made a little, after our Monday meeting, somebody was sharing about this, and I have a bigger one at home, but I made this little graphic that says, these are two quotes about repetition. One is, repetition is not failure. Ask the waves, ask the leaves, ask the wind. I just love that. And I'm reminded of, you know, like, if the sun rises, our higher power, God, watches it and says, oh, that's fantastic. Let's do that again tomorrow. So it's not failure. It's ask the waves, ask the leaves. And then the quote from the OA day to time, or for today's, repetition is the only form of permanence that nature can achieve. And that's a George Santana. And I made about 16 of these, so if anybody wants one as a bookmark or something after, come on up. So what works? What are the practices that work for me today? I live alone, and I don't have to cook for anybody else, and I can make my own decisions. So I'll say that as an underground thing. So that makes it easier. I realize we all have different patterns of eating. My pattern is not binging. My pattern is grazing. So it's extremely hard for me to do what a lot of people do very successfully, which is to have 3 meals a day and nothing in between. That works really well. And I have tried that before, and it doesn't work very well for me. So what I had to do is find things that I could eat in between meals that were on my meal plan and were okay. And almost everywhere I go, I have a big thermos of Irish black tea, and it's hot. And there's something about drinking a warm liquid that really soothes me. A lot of my, some of my eating in between meals is hunger, real hunger, and I have some nourishing, okay snacks that I allow myself. And other times it's just loneliness or boredom. You know, I remember I used to say, well, I'm a little bored. I think I'll make cinnamon toast. I mean, that was it, but that solved everything. And I'll have a couple of pieces of cinnamon toast and tea, and it kind of passed the time, and I had to find new ways to not eat out of boredom or loneliness. Starting my day, I have a routine, except on really miserable days, of walking before breakfast. I get up, first thing I do, I'm retired, so caveat, I can do this. So the first thing I do when I wake up is I take a walk. You know, I don't have instantly into my walking clothes, and the walk is about a half an hour. It's a couple of miles. And then when I come home, I make a big mug of tea, and I sit in my chair, and I do my spiritual practice. And everybody has a different spiritual practice. Mine involves reading three different readers, reading some material from my own faith, and then actually writing, journaling. I kind of journal with my higher power. I kind of say something, and then I wait, and then I write down what I think my higher power is responding to me. So reading and writing, and then doing a 10th step every day, and then also setting an intention. From all that material, it's too much material to read, and so I have brain fog, so I try to choose one thing to think about or one intention for the day, and that works pretty well. Eating simple meals that nourish and satisfy me. It took me a long time to figure out what I like to eat. I'm somewhat of a bulk eater, and so what satisfies me is something big, and like my lunch is a huge salad that most people would think I was going to serve to four people, but I'm not. I'm just going to serve it to me. I have one of two breakfasts, one of two lunch, and one of about six dinners, and I know exactly what they are. I personally do not have a food plan, but my food plan are these parameters. So I'll often at 5 o'clock open the refrigerator door and think, what's for dinner? But the things that are for dinner are there waiting for me. That doesn't work for some people. It works for me because what is important for me is I don't want to think about food. This has worked out where very few of my waking thoughts are about what I'm going to eat or not eat because I already know. Keeping an environment that supports me. I remember Dr. Phil years ago talked about this a lot, and it really impressed me. And that is to just have things in the house that are for me, and things that aren't for me aren't in the house. And if there are a few things that are kind of what we call yellow light foods, I don't have them in translucent containers where I can see them. No, I'm not triggered visually by food. Another big thing that works for me is to use the word noticing instead of judging when I'm looking at how I'm behaving. I often say to my friends, pretend like you're just a fly on the wall and you're noticing what this person is doing. Oh, isn't that interesting? Three extra of whatever today. She normally only has one, you know, whatever. Instead of saying, oh, that's terrible. Why did you do that again? So, I mean, to try to remove the judging and just to notice, and then to ask yourself, how's that working for you? Is that working well or not? Being like a kind fairy grandmother when you're kind of overlooking how you're doing, and to be encouraging and loving for yourself. I've learned to nurture myself in ways that don't include food. So if you haven't ever done that, start a list of things that really help nurture yourself that aren't food. Some are expensive, like a massage, and some aren't. Some are just like taking a hot bath. Today, I have probably about a minute or two left. What's up for me today is I'm getting old. And when you get old, your metabolism slows down. And I had my 80th birthday last spring, and also recovering from a heart attack. And I'm doing really well, but my whole system has slowed down. Therefore, I don't need as much food. And that's really hard for me because I just said I'm a bulk eater. So I am very active all morning. I have lunch, and by 2 o'clock I'm on the couch. And I'm usually on the couch for 2 hours, and I'll sleep solidly for an hour out of the two. And then I go to bed at 11 and sleep till 7. So, you know, I'm sleeping 10 hours a day. And that's when I would normally be walking or moving. So I've had to, you know, realistically, I now wear a Fitbit. I do exercise in the morning, but it kind of reminds me of how many steps I've taken. And I live in a senior living complex. It's on the third floor. And so if I'm kind of low, I'll just go up and down the stairs a few times, you know, during the day. And then the other thing that works for me is I play around with drawing and sketching and making cards. So if I am bored or lonely, I'll just, my art table is in my living room, which is my one room. And I'll just make a card for somebody, or I'll just draw. Yesterday I drew a carrot, you know, and I got into the carrot, and it was very lovely. And I watercolored the carrot, and then I do a lot of posting on Facebook, and so, and I'm in these art communities where we all encourage one. So I use my art to create gifts and cards for other people. Like, I had a lot of fun doing this after that Monday. Thanks. After that Monday meeting, this one woman was so struck by this idea of repetition that I came home and, you know, created these two pages in my journal. So I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy you're here, and thank you.